You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past, the podcast that focuses on inspiring you to move forward from what's been holding you back in life. Each week, we talk with clinicians, coaches, mental health advocates, and those who've overcome tremendous odds and now use their journey to encourage you throughout yours. I'm Matt Pappas, certified coach and NLP master practitioner, alongside Joanne Suppressi, author, certified coach, and hypnotherapist. In addition to talking with amazing guests on the show, we share practical tips and insightful strategies that empower and encourage you to break free from anxiety, self-doubt, and the negative mindsets that keep you stuck. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Hey, greetings, friend, and welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, we want to thank a couple of incredible organizations. INLP Center, offering world-class online neuro-linguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. If you've ever considered becoming a coach or simply want more information on their programs, just head over to inlpcenter.org. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. Also, we're taking some time to evaluate the direction of Beyond Your Past Radio to make sure we are bringing you the type of content that you want to hear. We've created a short listener survey that you can take that will help shape the future and direction of the podcast. It only takes 1 to 2 minutes. It's completely anonymous, and we would sure appreciate it if you consider sharing your voice. You can find the survey at beyondyourpastradio.com/listener survey. That's beyondyourpastradio.com/listener survey. And on a personal note, I want to say a special thank you to everyone who's offered their prayers and kind words during the recent hiatus of the podcast. We took a couple weeks off from recording, editing, and publishing while I've been recovering from surgery, and also this gave Joanne some time to work on some of her projects. It was a much-needed rest and time to heal and release ourselves from the weekly timetable of getting a new episode ready and recording new ones and everything that goes on with that. Now we're happy to be back again and looking forward to getting on track with a new episode where I talk with my good friend and fellow coach, Rachel Grant. Rachel has been on Beyond Your Past Radio several times over the years, and it's always a pleasure to get together and talk about healing from trauma and life as a survivor. Rachel Grant is a sexual abuse survivor coach with an MA in counseling psychology. Her website, rachelgrantcoaching.com, features her individual and group work with survivors, and also her book, Beyond Surviving, her Facebook group, Masterclass, and free and low-cost Audible downloads covering topics such as shame, boundaries, abandonment, and much more. Today we're talking about learning how to craft your survivor story. What does that mean? How does your story change throughout your journey of healing, and how do you share it and when? We also talk about the family dynamic of being a survivor and learning how to forge relationships with those in your family who may have known about your past and those that may have not. Should we try and forge those relationships? Should we not? What are the benefits? Rachel and I discuss these topics and share some of our own personal stories in these areas. So sit back, relax, and let's join my chat with Rachel Grant, starting right now. Hey, Rachel, welcome back to Beyond Your Past. I'm always so excited to talk with you, my friend. How are you?
Hey, Matt. I am well today. Thank you for having me back. Hello, hello, Beyond Your Past community. It's nice to be back here again.
Yep. It is always a pleasure to bring you on the podcast to talk about so many amazing things in the world of being a survivor and how we can recover and the hope and the healing and the struggles and everything about it. So today we're going to talk about family dynamics and the struggle of telling your story to family members when they don't believe you, or the struggle of going to a family event and you're around toxic people and all kinds of things to where you can feel a little uneasy. You can feel a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of worry, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to dive into that for a little bit, maybe share a little bit of our own personal stories as well in terms of how we've dealt with that and all kinds of good stuff. So why don't we jump right into it here? You need no introduction whatsoever, but if you want to share a minute and say hello, by all means, go ahead.
Well, sure. For anyone who's tuning in and hasn't connected with me before, heard me before, just to let you know, I am Rachel Grant, and I work with survivors of childhood sexual abuse who are really just beyond sick and tired of feeling that broken and unfixable and like nothing's ever going to change. And I help them break free from the pain of the past and move on with their lives. So I've been working as a sexual abuse recovery coach for 12 years. Oh my gosh. I can't believe it. How did that happen? I blinked and here I am. And I really love working with men and women from all over the country, all over the world. And my Beyond Surviving program was really born out of my own experience of healing from childhood sexual abuse. And then from there, really studying and researching and kind of coming at it from the perspective of how do we heal from this injury of trauma and, you know, reclaim our lives. And certainly a big piece of that in my own journey was navigating family relationships. And in the years that I've been working with clients, I've seen all sorts of circumstances and situations that people are navigating when it comes to disclosing to family, showing up at events, just like you were saying. So I'm really stoked to dig into this conversation today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will be sure and link all of the past episodes that you've been on the podcast here because they're all amazing. And wow, cool. I can't believe it's been 12 years. Wow, that's just amazing. I mean, I met you, well, I guess I reached out to you several years ago at some difficult points of my own healing journey because, you know, your content's amazing. I've read your book and then, of course, bringing you on the podcast and things. But your work with survivors is just so well known. You know, for anybody who's never checked out your website, just go to rachelgrantcoaching.com. I'll be sure and link that in the show notes as well because your programs are incredible. And so, yeah, absolutely. So let's kind of talk about this whole family dynamic thing because, yeah, I mean, you've got some stories, I'm sure, of how things went when you were perhaps telling your story to certain family members or you were going to events and there were certain people who knew and certain ones that didn't. And maybe there was that person you really didn't want to be around and all that kind of good stuff. So let's dive into that a little bit and kind of see where this conversation takes us.
Awesome. Well, you know, one of the reasons why this topic was really top of mind for me when you reached out about having another chat is I just completed this storytelling project. And it was a group of women, 8 women who came together to craft their, you know, true life stories, if you will, focusing in on one kind of area or main event of your life. And, you know, Matt, when I started that project, I had in mind that I was going to be writing about my sexual abuse story. That's the most common story I kind of go to and gravitate to. But after the very first day of that workshop, I was like, I'm bored with this story. I don't really want to explore that right now. Like, I want something else. What else is up in my life? And what really came through for me was exploring the relationship with my mom that really ended up at a place of being disconnected, completely cutting her off for 2 years in my life, and then coming back together and then walking alongside her now as she has Alzheimer's. And it caused me to really reflect on how my mom showed up for me in this area of sexual trauma. Because even though I wasn't exploring the sexual abuse pointedly, a lot of where there were disconnects with my mom and I were as certainly as a result of the abuse that I experienced. So when I was 10 years old, my grandfather began abusing me. It's likely he was abusing me before that, but this is the marker for me of when it started because that's where I have the most conscious memory. And one day, you know, this was going on for some time. And one day my mom walked by and happened to see him touching me. And man, Matt, she came tearing out onto the front porch where we were sitting and she yelled at me, you know, get inside here, her best mama voice, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as a little person, I was scared. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. Right. And it just confirmed like every fear that I had in my mind. Now, of course, years and years later, having done this healing work, I really recognize that as a moment of terror for her. And she's just trying to get me away, you know, from that situation. And within 24 hours, my grandfather who lived with us was moved out of the house. And so there was some relief. There was like this immediate moment of support and care and recognition But there were all these little things that happened afterwards that ended up causing disconnect. They were doing the very best they could. But, you know, this will be back in the 80s, right? Resources, small town Oklahoma, resources were scarce. Information and education was scarce. And so they made a lot of mistakes, not out of wanting to cause me harm or not wanting to help, but just because lack of information and knowledge. But all of that kind of showed up for me in my journey of trying to heal, of trying to make sense of where my family, where I now fit in with my family. That was my experience, and I certainly can share more and say more as we go along. I'm curious about your experience, Matt. What was, when you think about kind of the initial coming out, if you will, I sometimes think of it like that. Right. You know?
I do that too.
You know, yeah. Because I've never heard this part of your story. What was that like for you?
Well, and it's funny that you use the word coming out, because just like on a total side note, when I first started telling my story on blogging, and I was doing some YouTube videos a little bit, and I was using an alias, you know, because I didn't want to use my real name. I was afraid and ashamed and all the stuff. And so I was using this name Lyric for a long time because it was musical and I like music and whatever. Oh, so yeah, right. Yeah. But then at some point, and honestly, like, I wish I still had the video, because that account got accidentally deleted, and I'm still just so irritated that I did that. But there was a video that I had put up originally where I had my, and I think I called it my coming out party or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And I shared that, you know, hey, you know, my name was, you know, I said in essence that, you know, my name is actually Matt and I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. And I kind of got rid of the Lyric alias and started signing everything with my real name. But it took me a while mm-hmm. to get there, right? Because like when I first started, I was totally terrified of telling anybody. So right. I was writing and I was using this alias. And so I felt comfortable. And so it served me for a time and I'm glad I used it. But eventually I got to a point where I felt confident enough to be like, hey, you know, I'm a survivor and I've been through a lot of crap and that's okay. I don't have to hide. I don't have to be ashamed. Mm-hmm. And so I had my little coming out party, as you mentioned. And ever since then, I've just, you know, been who I am. But as far as like family members go, it's kind of interesting. And yeah, you like, I grew up in the 80s as well. And there was no talk of mental health. Or, I mean, if there was, it certainly wasn't in my circles, because I was a teenager just living my life and, you know, working at, you know, a fast food restaurant and trying to just scrape by and have fun and do what I was doing. And while I knew I was a survivor back then, I had no idea. I wasn't exploring it. I didn't really care. And when we know back in the 80s, the culture just wasn't anything about that. It was just have fun and forget everything, right? But
yes.
Right. And so then like it eventually as I, it wasn't until my early 40s that I decided to seek the help of a therapist. And, you know, I originally went there after I got divorced and I was trying to, as I told her, fix myself, because clearly I had been divorced twice, so something was wrong with me and it was all me. And so we went down the road of, you know, the first 6 months were a lot of, you know, working on relationships and self-esteem and all the stuff you do when you're working with a counselor after, you know, grieving the loss of a marriage that ended and all that stuff.
Right.
So, but then it came out eventually through a writing assignment that I, you know, mentioned that I was a survivor and that, you know, this teenager up the street had abused me and between 5 and 10 years old. And that's when the light bulb went on. And that's, you know, we started taking a couple of years to dive into all that. And the interesting part, and this is kind of like the short story long kind of part of it. My family knew about it and I didn't know they knew. So I wasn't ever able to really tell my story. Yeah, right. Mm. Yeah, right. Right. So get this. Honestly, I can't even tell you how old I was. It was early teenage years, I believe. My parents sent me to a therapist because they thought something was wrong and they wanted to get me help. Well, in talking to that therapist, I had apparently let on that I was a survivor and that, you know, this kid up the street did all these things. And she broke the confidence and told my parents what had happened. Then my parents told my sister, then they told my brother, then I told my uncle and everybody. And I'm like, so by the time I was at a point where I was ready to tell my story, everybody already like knew parts of it.
Yeah, we know it.
Yeah, right. You're right. Sucks. I was so mad. And yeah. I mean, to this day, like if I could, I have no idea who the therapist was. I think I literally must have been in like a total state of dissociation during that whole time because I don't remember hardly any of it. But I never got to share my story in that way. And so I guess over time, I kind of came to terms with it. Hey, you know, this is what happened. I can't change it. I've got to do my best to work with what I've got right now. So I did tell them in my own way, my truth of my story. It's probably been about 4 or 5 years ago now. And that felt good to be able to kind of get that out. And even though they knew, and of course, nobody ever brought it up, I was able to at least get it out of my head and speak my truth. Right. So that was kind of my version of that was kind of my story. And just but the way it went down really sucked.
It sure does sound like that. Yeah, it's a fascinating thing how, you know, we have this experience that on one hand, we want to like not talk about it all. I remember when my parents, shortly after they found out about the abuse, set me up with a counselor. And again, doing their best to figure out like, how do we get this gal some support and do what she needs? But I was just not ready. And I was like, there is no way I'm talking about this. And it's kind of one of those things where this experience is something that we don't want to talk about, but we also want to have some ownership of. And so when the story gets told by other people, it hurts and it sucks. And you know, having a story witnessed is, I think, so very critical. And one of the ways I think a lot of us who have gone through trauma are re-traumatized is when the people who we imagine are supposed to be there and to support us and to guide us the most abandon us in that moment and don't have the self-resources, don't have the capacity or the willingness to stand with us, you know, in the space of the experience that we've had and instead dismiss it or deny it or rationalize it, you know, all of these things. You know, I think I'm very lucky in the sense that that I didn't have that level of kind of denial and refusal. But even so, there were missteps. I remember very clearly a time where my mom we were out running errands and she decided, she just announces to me as we're out running errands, we're going to go by, you know, your Aunt Betty's. Now, this is where my grandfather was now living. Mm-hmm. And I remember immediately, Matt, oh, okay, I'll just stay in the car. Like, you can go in. And, no, I want you to come in. And, I'm a kid still. So feeling, you know, in that space of like, you don't have any choice here. I have to do what my mom tells me. And so I remember walking in and she walked straight, you know, kind of guided me straight into the bedroom. And she pulled up a chair next to the bed and where he was laying down and my Aunt Betty was there next to me. And I remember hearing my mom start this conversation with my grandfather along the lines of, you need to apologize for what you did. What you did was wrong. It wasn't okay. And there's like this beautiful effort of, I kind of get teary eyed when I think about it. I don't often tell this particular story. There's like, looking back at it now, there's like this beautiful advocate in my mom, right? And she's like trying to get this person to give me something that she feels like I deserve, which is an apology. But also recognizing like how little that would make a difference now sitting with it. But it also opened this can of worms because all I remember hearing him say is, no, she wanted this. She deserved it. And then I kind of checked out. I just remember hearing those two things and then I was gone, just totally dissociated from the whole experience. But those words really ended up sticking with me, you know, and I think there are people in our lives, particularly family members, who I think they really do want the best for us. And I think they really are trying to figure out how to guide and support us in a situation that for most people, they have no handle on and they have no education around. Even today, it's not like everybody knows how to handle this situation and is well trained and we have deep conversations about it and we teach parents what to do and what to say and what not to do. We're getting a little better on that, but I think people are still very much in the dark. And so they're scrambling around and then sometimes end up causing harm unintentionally. I think that's one side of the coin. And then certainly from the stories that I hear from my clients, there are also family members who just outright refuse to acknowledge what happened or are outright blaming the victims of trauma. And that's just devastating, I think, because, you know, we're looking to those people in our lives to take a stand for us. And so it definitely adds another layer of kind of healing and work to do.
Yeah, it really does. And it's, I mean, what you mentioned, you know, your situation and mine are similar in some ways in that, you know, it wasn't my parents that were, you know, that were the people who did this stuff to me. It was a kid up the street. Mm-hmm. So to my knowledge, to this day, that never happened to anybody else in my family that I know of, you know, immediate family or extended. So my parents had no clue what to do. And I still, And I guess by that, I should say my sister and brother had no idea what to do. And I think to this day, they still kind of tread lightly. We obviously don't talk about that very much, like family gatherings or anything anymore. Mm-hmm. But both of them kind of tried to get me to talk a little bit about it when I did share my story. And I gave them enough that I thought would be okay for them to handle. And, you know, to this day, I don't know if that was the right approach or not, but it's what felt comfortable to me because I didn't want to overwhelm them, you know, and go down this path of giving them all kinds of details and what happened and all that stuff. But it is true. If you've not been through it or you haven't done some research or you haven't been trained in how to deal with it, there's really like when somebody tells you a story like what you shared or like so many of your clients and listeners and people who listen to this show have been through, you have no idea what to say. And, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes you say the wrong thing just by accident, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. right? I mean, which can be horribly traumatizing, or sometimes you just sit there in silence because you have no idea what to say. And that makes you feel like the person doesn't even care either, when in actuality they just don't know what to say. And there's so many aspects of this that really, when you tell somebody, I'm not sure what's more difficult, like talking to somebody or being with somebody who has no idea or somebody who denies it. I mean, I think they're each equally difficult.
Painful. Yeah. You know, this is one of the reasons why in the Beyond Surviving program, when we reach the step in the journey where we're talking about crafting and telling our story. First of all, how do we own our own story in such a way that when we think about the story or when we tell the story, we aren't re-traumatizing ourselves and actually hurting ourselves on a neurological level by reiterating old beliefs and old tropes, if you will, and reinforcing old negative pathways. But the other side of that coin is actually one of the things I teach is how to tell your story in a way that doesn't traumatize the listener and also brings them into the present experience with you. And that's, I think, really critical that, you know, it really sucks that so much lands on us as the people who have experienced the abuse to do all of the cleanup work, if you will. But that is the way it is. And one of the things that I believe that we really can do is be responsible for how we tell our story so we can minimize and reduce, not completely, you know, eliminate, but minimize and reduce the risk that people will be uncomfortable or traumatized or, quite frankly, say something stupid, right? Because people just don't know how to hold and respond to these stories. And I think that, yes, a lot of us end up feeling hurt and re-traumatized when we do try to share and open up something that's so vulnerable, and then it lands in a way that can't be received. That is painful. I think it's a good point you made earlier as well that, you know, for me, my grandfather died about a year after the abuse ended. So I wasn't ever faced with these circumstances. There was only one, like in the midst between the abuse being found out and when he died, a family event where I went to and he was there. We always did family reunions and we went camping. And I remember one of my aunts asking me to go and wake him up from his nap. And like in that moment, I really didn't know, did she know what had happened or did she not know what happened? But again, being the dutiful kid, follow the adult's directions. It's probably why I'm such a rebel these days, Matt.
Yeah, right,
that.
Right.
I don't listen to you people anymore. You keep messing my life up when you do that stuff. So, you know, and I went into the camper he was in, and, you know, it was like this walk of horror, right? Like I could still feel the sensations of like walking down, you know, the little skinny hallway there, and, you know, him laying back and just like barely touching him, right? Just enough to wake him up. And then he immediately like leapt at me, like lurched towards me. And I was, you know, adept enough. I just ran away at that point. But long story short, where I was really heading with that is I didn't have to deal with long-term interaction, like the next birthday party and then the next, you know, wedding or the next funeral or whatever. And, you know, for those of our listeners who are navigating that, having some strategies for doing that and making your way through that is just really critical. So maybe we can talk a little bit about, you know, what advice or what guidance we might have for folks who are in that sort of situation. Do you have any initial thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, having a strategy of how to handle a situation when you are around somebody who is either directly involved or had knowledge of, or even if you just don't feel safe around for any number of reasons.
Yeah, good point.
Giving yourself the opportunity ahead of time to kind of plan out different ways that, you know, you can take care of yourself. One of the biggest ones that I was taught early on, and I use in my own life and in certain situations even today, and I teach with people, is give yourself an exit strategy, right? Like, if I'm going to be around somebody, right? Like, you know, and especially like if I know where the place is, like if it's at a house or something and I'm familiar with it, where can I go to feel safe if I don't feel safe, right? I mean, can I simply just walk outside and go sit in my car? Can I go to the bathroom and lock the door and kind of compose myself? Is there somebody I can text that, you know, and have like a safe word that I can give them to like call me right away and, you know, give me a reason to leave because of some kind of, you know, emergency, like give yourself some kind of reason. Right. Yes. Right. Yeah. I mean, right. Like it's kind of like the rescue
call.
It's like
the bad
date
like
scenario. First date,
you know,
right?
These women have been doing this for years, right, Matt? You know?
That's exactly what it is. Right. Like, oh my God, that's so funny. Cause I knew you were going to say that. That's so great. God. But yeah, like honestly, like just being okay with giving yourself that kind of reason to go. And even if it's just nothing more than just saying, hey, you know what? I need to leave. And then you just get the hell up and go. Right. But give yourself permission to be okay with that ahead of time. So you don't have to almost kind of justify it to yourself in the heat of the moment. I think it's huge.
Yeah. I would second all of that. I think thinking ahead to the scenario and things that you can do to minimize and reduce risk. So one situation that comes to mind is a client of mine who was going to Thanksgiving dinner. And first of all, you know, we explored making the request of, can you not invite this person? And in some instances, that's a really important thing to consider as well. Like actually just making that request. If you'd like me to be there, then I'd really prefer this person not to be in attendance as well. And some family members, some people will be willing, you know, to meet you where you're at with that. In this case, that wasn't an option. And so we talked about her, what her biggest fears were. And I think this is just to give people like a little strategy. This is a great question to ask yourself. Like, if I go to this event, I'm most worried or concerned that. And you might have a bunch of different ones, so you can take them one by one. But the very first thing that came to mind for my client was, I'm really most afraid that I'm going to end up being sat next to this person, and I'm going to have to endure an entire meal sitting right there next to him. And so we talked about, how can you minimize and reduce the risk of that happening? A lot of times what we do, Matt, is we think about the thing we're scared of happening, and then we just ruminate on that, right? This is going to happen. What am I going to, oh my God, it's going to be so terrible. But we never step into the next level, which is, hey, there are actually opportunities to minimize and reduce the risk of that thing happening. So for example, we considered options. She could ask the hostess to use seating cards, you know, and then, you know, be a little formal about it and place out, you know, names where people are going to sit and make the request of the hostess to make sure I'm sitting on the other end from this person. What we ultimately ended up choosing to do is she got there early and she brought like three coats with her. And she went to the table because the person didn't want to do the whole formal, like put name cards on. And so she got there early. She brought three jackets with her and she went to the table and sat down the three jackets right next to each other, you know, looking like people have already chosen these.
Right.
Seats.
Nice. Yeah.
Right. And so the party gets going, people are arriving, the abuser arrives, and people start to sit for dinner, and she goes and sits, and it's not until he sits down way on the other side, right, because he can't sit next to her because these coats are there, that she pulls up the coats and then lets other people fill in. It was
nice.
So genius,
good one.
Right? Yeah. And so, you know, is it a pain in the ass that we even have to do these sorts of things?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes. Is it unfair? Yes. And at the same time, we really can take a lot of ownership and authority, I think, to really take good care of ourselves in these situations. And we can get creative. And there's almost always a solution or something that we can do to set up, you know, the situation in a way that we can feel prepared. And so giving it that thought ahead of time is really critical.
Yeah, I agree. And I got one more too. And then I want to get into something that you mentioned about sharing your story again. But one other one that I found is really helpful, and I did this a lot. Have somebody there to be a safe person for you or to run interference for you. Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, like, for a long time, I wasn't real comfortable around my mom for tons of reasons, which we have no time to get into on this podcast, but I've mentioned before. And so whenever I would go over to visit her, I made sure that I was not alone with her. Mm-hmm. I always had somebody with me, whether it was my kids or my brother was there, my sister, somebody to take the heat off of me of having to interact one-on-one. Right. So having a safe person, whoever it is, you know, so like, I mean, in some cases, I was able to tell them ahead of time if I felt, you know, if they knew my story. In other cases, I just kind of winged it as I went, you know, but always never going someplace where I could be alone and be cornered and feel uncomfortable and unsafe.
Right.
Like that was a big one.
That's really good.
Yeah.
I just want to add two things before we move back to the telling the story, which something that you reminded me of, which is, I think the big theme here and the big idea is to be creative. A lot of times we have these, like, this is how it's supposed to be. This is how it should be. But we can really get creative and set ourselves up for success. One little short story, another client of mine, a wedding, and it was her niece. And she was like, I really want to celebrate this niece and be at her wedding, but I just am not in the place where I can handle being in the same space with this abuser. And so I said, all right, well, let's find a date. And you and your niece are going to have your own special wedding day together. And you just go with her and have that time to celebrate her. Right. So big idea here, folks, is wherever there looks like there are limitations and you have to's, almost always there's a what about and maybe if that you can look at. And also, not mentioned yet, it's 100% okay to not go, to
Hell
not
yeah,
be involved,
exactly.
To just say, nope, I'm not interested. No, thank you. Right? You do not have to go and participate and put yourself in these situations if you're not ready or it can't be managed in a safe way. Yeah.
That's a huge one. And one that I think oftentimes, you know, we feel guilty for turning somebody down for an invitation. So we're like, I'll go, I'll figure it out. And so, you absolutely have the right to say, you know what, I'm not going to go, and, you know, put your own healing first and be okay with it. Right. And, you know, but if you do feel like you need to go, or, you know, there's some reason that you are required to be there for any number of reasons, then be creative, think outside the box, have as many plans in place as you can so you can feel safe and, you know, stay as long as you want. Maybe you plan on staying for an hour or two and then you just go. Right. So there's lots of ways around this, you know, for the Good. Family gatherings, the parties, the cookouts, the holiday stuff. And so, but the other thing I want to talk about here yet is something that you mentioned, and we'll kind of come full circle about telling your story is, I know there comes a point in time when you don't want to tell that story anymore. And, you know, the story, you know, perhaps of being a survivor or maybe a story you've shared quite often because, there's lots of different reasons, not the least of which is that you've healed enough that you don't feel like you need to tell that story as often as you may have needed to tell it before. And I mean, I tell you, like, it's interesting how this podcast has evolved, just to use it as an example. When I first started doing the blogging and the writing, it was all about my survivor journey and how much life sucked. And, you know, I'm a survivor and everything's terrible and I don't understand and all this stuff. Well, then over time, obviously it's evolved into, you know, having guests on, and now I'm a coach and working with survivors and all this other stuff. So it's not so much about my story anymore. And I don't really tell the, you know, my abuse story near as much, because I think I've healed enough to the point where I don't need to. Now, if it's going to help somebody directly, sure, I'll tell them, but it's not something that I tell as much. So I'm finding new creative ways to share a message or to get my point across with a client or whatever it is without telling that same survivor story. And I think that's can sometimes make us feel like we are almost ignoring it or kind of pushing it aside. But in reality, if you can reframe it into, mm-hmm. look how much I've healed, I don't need to tell mm-hmm. it anymore. That's pretty mm-hmm. big.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we think about this experience of trauma and abuse, when it's happening, it's like there's this big light that is shining on it. We're in the midst of the trauma. And so it becomes this central focus because we're in survival mode. And so everything is about surviving and making it through this abuse. And then most people following that, once they're out of the trauma, once they're out of the circumstance or situation, go into denial. Okay, good. That's over. I'm fine now. Right?
Like, been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Yep.
Yes, right. Oh, I love that. So, and then eventually something in your life is going to happen that makes you say, this is not gone. It's still here. I'm going to have to deal with it. And then so you start that process of acknowledging and working through what happened and talking about the experience. And then most people get to the place where they get sick of that, just talking it through, and they want results. They want change. They want transformation. And that's really where you and I come into the scene, right? Okay, you have a good handle on your experience, but now what are we going to do about that? How are we going to transform and change the way you see yourself, the way you show up in your world, the way you relate to other people? And the whole intention of that, like getting to the other side of, when I talk about beyond surviving, what I really mean by that is you have this experience in the context of your whole life. That spotlight now does not have to be just centrally focused on these experiences of abuse and trauma. You expand the scene, the lights fade, come up, and they highlight the whole stage of your life. And this moment and these experiences of abuse, they're there, they're in the light, but they're not the entire scene. It becomes like, you know, our life, I like to think of our lives as like this tapestry that we're constantly weaving, you know, old school tapestries that have scenes in them. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Matt? Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Yep. And that we're weaving these tapestries of our lives. And when we're out of balance, when we're really in the thick of the trauma, like the only scene on the tapestry is abuse. But as we heal and as we grow and as we evolve, that scene becomes just a thread in the tapestry. And we have so many stories to tell, and we have so many experiences to share that we can tell the story about the abuse, but it's a part of the story. It's not like this is my life and this is everything that you need to know about me. So I agree. Like the way that I talk about, I mean, certainly in my work, right? I come back to the stories that I use to illustrate certain points again and again. But when I'm in my day-to-day life, you know, the story is very short. I was sexually mm-hmm. abused by my grandfather. Done. Like, that's yep, it.
Exactly right.
That's, you yep. know, like you get to that place. And then I grew up in Oklahoma, and then I went to school at the University of Chicago. And then, oh my God, I love peanut butter ice cream. Like, it's all just there. But there isn't like this high energy and focus on the abuse. And that's my, you know, bottom line hope for survivors of abuse, that they reclaim their lives. And a big part of that is about putting the abuse and trauma in its place, which is a part of your life, but not your whole life.
That is so key. And, you know, as we start to wrap this up here, you and I and every client we've ever worked with and every survivor, you are in that spot of trauma. You know, this trauma is your whole life, and it's what you talk yeah. about, and, you know, it's what you do. And, you know, for me, for a long time, it was my focus. It's all I wrote about. It's all I talked about. I'm a survivor. Oh my God, what do I do? And, you know, okay, you know, now I need to read 100,000 books and watch a million videos and try and figure out all these skills and holy yes. shit. Right.
Right. But then, it's so real.
Exactly. It is. Right. And so like I immersed myself in all of this world of trauma, and I'm like, I'm a survivor. That's who I am. And I lived that for a long time. Now, obviously I know it is. And as you mentioned, it's part of your life. It's part of your tapestry, but it's not the whole thing. I think that's the reason to get into this healing journey in the first place, yes. right? I mean, yeah. if you're gonna put in all this hard work and dig up all this old horrible crap, there better be a good reason, you know, like some light at the end of the tunnel of being able to live your life. Right. You know, and to be able to say, yes, I was abused by a teenager off the street between 5 and 10. And, you know, I like pizza and popcorn and, you know, I love music and football and, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just be able to go around, you know, to talk about that and not be so traumatized, you know, just by the mere mention of it is really where, you know, you ultimately want to get in your healing journeys to be able to be to that point where you can talk about it and then move on and use your story to help people without re-traumatizing yourself and others. So yeah, for sure. I could not agree more.
Yeah. And one thing that just spurred in me around this theme that we're talking about of family. And I think a big higher theme that we're really looking at is how being witnessed in our pain. And mm-hmm. when we have people in our lives who refuse to witness our story, they deny it, they reject it, they rationalize it. Oh, that's painful. But we don't have to have specific people witness and honor our experience. But we do, I think, need someone to do that. We can do that for ourselves, but we can also have somebody, you know, external from us. And I think finding spaces in which you can tell your story, be seen, heard, listened to, believed is a big step towards that. And I see and hear people sometimes getting very stuck because they are holding out for my mom is going to believe me one day, or my dad is finally going to acknowledge what he did. And they're holding their healing. They're putting their healing on hold until they get those things. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say to anybody who's finding yourself in that place, please, like, we can find another route to healing, because holding on and waiting for those outcomes, man, you could be waiting for a really long time, and you deserve to start living now. So find other resources and other people who can witness and honor your story and experience if you have people in your family and in your circle who aren't capable of doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I cannot agree more. This has been amazing, Rachel. As always, I just completely enjoy talking to you. I mean, we could go on for hours, but I know right? So why don't we, I've got some notes here for the next time that we can definitely go down this road again and kind of dive into some of those things that we touched on more. But before we go, tell everybody where they can find your Beyond Surviving program, your book, all that good stuff.
Yes, please come visit me at rachelgrantcoaching.com. I encourage you to scroll down to the bottom of the first page and sign up to get my 3 stages of recovery checklist. This is a great place to start to kind of understand where you are in the healing journey, what the goals are of each of these stages, and what kind of support you want to get at each of those stages to make sure there's alignment. Check out the resources. There's all sorts of things that are available, like my podcast and my monthly support group and all these things. And of course, if I can be of any support to you at all, apply for a 60-minute Discover Your Genuine Self consultation, and we'll get together and talk a little bit about where you're in your journey and see if I can be a support to you.
Awesome, Rachel. Great as always. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I cannot wait, Matt, to do it again anytime. Oh,
same here. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should supersede the direction of a medical doctor or any mental health professional. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a review. We would sure appreciate it. Also, please consider sharing this episode with someone who may find it helpful. If you would like more information on working with Matt as your coach, just head over to beyondyourpast.com and schedule your free 1-hour chat. If you'd like to learn more about working with Joanne as your coach, please check out joannesuppressi.com and contact her for more information. We're always on the lookout for new guests. If you're interested in joining us on an upcoming episode, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to you soon.